Hey, what is up, guys? On this episode of Blood, Sweat, and Gear, we start out with our normal 30-minute banter segment. We talk about all sorts of fun stuff, and Victoria Felkar stops in, expert in all things hormone-related, to give Skip a little bit of education about his sleep habits. After that, we go to break, and when we come back, we answer your questions from the forum. That's forum.advicesradio.com. You guys can quickly join there and participate, ask questions, we'll answer them, talk about them on the show. This week, we cover test no ester dosing on a prop, tren, and EQ cycle. We talk about foam rolling to break up muscle fascia, a little bit of kettlebell talk. We talk about essential minerals and a whole lot more. So stick around, guys. And if you prefer, this is also available on video now. So you can check out the video version at YouTube or on Facebook, search Advices Radio. All right, guys, let's get to the program.
Advices Radio Network.
Blood, Sweat, and Gear is for informational and educational purposes only. Kids, don't try any of this at home.
Easy as his name and the voice coming
straight out of Compton. It's a brother that'll smother your mother and make your sister think I love her. Dangerous motherfucker raising hell. And if I ever get caught, I make bail. See, I don't give a fuck.
Welcome back to Blood, Sweat, and Gear. The show is brought to you by TrueNutrition.com. You guys can use our code ADVICES at checkout. I just picked up, what was it, the MPA Muscle Intrusion Lemon Ice Flavor. It's fucking amazing. Mixing that with one scoop of, what is that, Pepto-Pro. And it mixes absolutely clear, really easy on my stomach. Anyway, what's up, guys? I'm with S2H, Skip Hill. This is our first ever time doing Blood, Sweat, and Gear on video. Skip went out and he built a studio, basically a light studio. What's up, man? What's up with your studio?
I've been nailing eggshells and foam to the wall, trying to basically turn it into like this little studio. And then I thought you'd be able to see the new expensive microphone, all this shit. Can't see anything.
Also, Enrique said Samoan, not Somalian.
That's a little different. Okay. You know, the more I think about it, Somalian is pretty dark.
Yeah.
I was thinking Samoan when he said it, if it makes any. I was thinking of the heavy fat Samoan wrestler guy. So it would have been funnier had I gone with Somalian, because they're skinny but real, real dark. Got flies on their eyes, basically, right?
They don't even wipe. They don't even swat them away. They're used to
it. They don't move, right? They just land there, and they don't blink. It's like, oh, my God, you must have a lot of flies land on your eyes to get to that point.
And on that note, welcome to the show, S2H. How you doing?
I'm good. I had some allergies, so my normal sexy voice is a little deeper.
Yeah?
A little more off, but no, it's all good. I get to look at the contrasting colors of your two skins in front of me.
Yeah.
Which brings it, but people may not know that we actually have recorded with video on before. So Scott and Skip lied at Columbus at the Arnold and said they didn't know what I look like because they have seen me.
A couple times.
So I'm ratting them out because I like honesty.
How many times have you seen what he looks like, Scott? I'm saying seriously, Scott, I think who? I've seen twice. Scott, white Scott, not silhouette.
White Scott.
It's like this. You ever see that thing where they do like a test to prove to you like how much it's hard to recognize? Like they'll have a thing where they're like, they'll have like a classroom setting and then somebody comes in and they do something and then they leave. And then the question is, can you identify that person? Describe, and like nobody gets it right, you know, because it's like nobody was paying attention enough to know. That's the way I feel with Scott. Like you could put Scott, we've seen him, yes, but you could put him in a lineup of like 10 people. I wouldn't know.
If he walked by, I said this at the Arnold, if he walked by us, and it's kind of fucked up when you think about it, it's been a long time.
Right.
If he would have walked by us and not said anything and just walked, I would have never, I wouldn't have been like, oh shit, it's Scott, what's up, you made it. No. Matter of fact, he might have said hi. I'd be like, why is this motherfucker talking to me? Like, I don't understand who this is.
He could have even been like in the audience at the live podcast and we wouldn't have known.
Maybe.
Just like sitting in the back, you know?
Now, if I would see Guy Fieri at a restaurant, I'd be like, oh, Scott, what's up? And he'd be like, I'm not Scott.
To let people know I was actually there, and Skip let me stay at his room, so he fibbed even worse. Tell him, Skip. Tell him the truth.
Stay silhouette over there.
So, Skip, I was trying to get you to send me some video footage. I was at your Facebook wall, And I see if you sent me the video, I would be playing it right now. That's the reason I asked for it.
If I send it to you, right now, you can play it.
Yep, I can play it right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to multitask, and I think we all know how that's going to go.
All right. And in that case, I'm going to change the subject for a minute and say, hey, Scott, what kind of guns have you shot lately? And do you have any guns to show us? Show and tell with S2H? Not that kind of guns.
No. Not in my shadows. Lately? Oh, I don't know. Lots of stuff.
Yeah.
I shot a Daisy Red Ryder.
Really?
And, yeah. Hold on. I gotta clear my throat. I don't know. All kinds of shit.
Huh.
Well, Name it.
I don't know. Sorry. That's why I was asking you. I was trying to fill while we waited for Skip. I figured you'd give us
That's all I've got. The only thing I've got is the video I sent you. I don't have those two videos because once I post them, I get rid of them because otherwise they take up a bunch of space on my phone. And I don't normally talk like this with my hands, so the video is totally fucking me up.
Let me see if I can download this. My computer's trying. In the future, I'll just have this stuff ready.
I'll actually not delete it, and I will give it to you.
We did a video with Dr. Scott. And he was able to use charts and graphs and stuff, which he likes that kind of thing. You know what I mean? He's a big fan of the charts and graphs.
That's beyond my scope. Can you do charts and graphs and do graphics up on the screen and everything if we need it?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Ooh, I'm going to have to put the mute button on this while I try to get this thing downloaded here. Let's see. All right, I'm going to save this video.
Run that back again. Scott Stevenson did what? He had graphs?
Yeah, he had charts and graphs. Oh, dude, this is the... okay, yeah, I'm going to share this thing. So I have a bunch of different stuff open right now, but you guys will be able to see this. It's not the way I want to share it, but I can do a screen share, and which I'm going to do right now. You guys won't be able to see it, but here's Skip doing belt squat. You just did belt squats. When was this?
What's today? Monday, Thursday at Miami Iron Gym. Mm.
So you're going down there every week now?
Yeah, once a week. I train legs down there. That's it. My wife won't tolerate anything more than that. And which is fair because it used to take us an hour to get to and from the gym.
Yeah.
You know, an hour one way in Colorado. And, you know, one of the things when we moved down here was we said we're going to be, you know, so much closer to everything. So it takes 4 minutes to get to Titan. And I love Titan and so does she. But I just wanted more equipment and I want that environment down there in, you know, at Miami Iron once a week. So she's good about it. It puts us back real late and she has to get up earlier in the morning, obviously, than I do.
Yeah.
So she puts up with it. She's good with it.
Yeah. I remember we talked about that a couple of weeks ago about how you were starting to go out there like once a week and not get carried away with it just so that she wouldn't have to, get up early in the morning. I'm looking at what you're doing right now. How many sets would you do on an exercise like this, and what part of the workout would it be in?
Well, this last workout using this piece was completely different than what I normally do because I won't ever open with it. Oh. I don't want to load plates and plates and plates, and I kind of look at it more not as necessarily a finisher, but you know, something halfway through or further into my leg session than to open, but I opened with it. My wife's back has been bothering her from the coughing fit she had for a few months, but anyway, nobody cares about her right now. It's all about me. So, but I decided to open with it to be fair. And I thought, you know, it'd be a nice change of pace, but we just banged them out one after another. We probably did 6, 7, 8 working sets and plenty of warm-ups in there too, because, you know, you got to get that belt right so that it, especially as you get heavier, as it rides down over the inside of your thighs, because it can freaking hurt and pinch your skin and everything else. So we did quite a bit. We probably took up a third of the leg session, which isn't common for me. I have a lot of variety these days.
Heather King just asked, and I know the answer, but you can answer her. Does your wife compete as well, Skip? Impressed by her lifts? She's jacked too, by the way. I see her profile picture here. Heather King's got some freaking ridiculous biceps and shoulders on her.
Yeah, oh yeah, she does. Just got a pro card.
Nice.
Yeah, we're going back and forth right now trying to figure out you know, for a good fit, that sort of thing. I don't want to work with her. She's on the fence. She was thinking about some guy in a silhouette or something over there. I'm like, no. If you can't see his face, don't trust him.
Jason Jason Lambert says S2H looks like he's in the witness protection program on a Dateline episode. He does.
Yeah, it fits.
It is. It works. It does work, doesn't it?
And we did it by accident.
Well, that's badass, man. We just got a belt squat at Powerhouse Novi. It's pretty badass, man. This one is by, I believe it's by Rogue. It's nice.
Ooh.
Oh, what?
I heard that is second rate equipment. It's good, but yeah. I guess Elite FTS is superior in quality, and Elite FTS sells a... Look, I'm just doing this so I don't get fired, okay?
Yeah. Use code SKIP.
Elite FTS does make their version of the Pit Shark, and it is incredibly durable, commercial, expensive, but well worth it. How do you like that piece, though? Have you used it yet or not?
I just did yesterday, actually. I like it a lot. You know what the weird thing is with belt squats? You have to get the height right. You know what I mean? Or you bottom it out too easily. Yep. That's the problem.
And there's leverage. There's connections that change the leverage, too. And you can... You know, you can set it, but most of them do, where you get maybe three or four different connections where you hook the belt to the lever.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you can set it all the way back and it makes that weight lighter so you can get more plates on. I'm a lazy son of a bitch. I don't want to load any more plates than I have to.
Right.
So I put it on the front. Yet at the same time, you got to be careful with your foot position because it can actually pull you forward.
Yes.
So you got to find balance with it. And the people I've come across, they either really like it or they just don't like it. And what's cool down there is as much as I like it, nobody uses this thing.
So I don't
have to wait to get on it. So, and it can, it's usually pretty busy in there. They're open 24 hours a day and it's just as busy when I get there at 8:30 as it is, 10:30, 11 when we leave.
There is a different crowd at 8 o'clock at night at the gym than there is. Like, I train at 1 in the afternoon. Different group of people, isn't there?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's usually geriatric during the day. They're retired. Well, it is in South Florida.
You're here, too.
Okay, they're retired. They got all the time in the world. They're taking their time in the parking lot. They might check their phone. They're having coffee.
Right.
No, it's when it gets late like that, especially at Titan, people are racing in, racing out because they're gonna close at a specific time.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So you gotta be. That's part of the thing with a gym that closes at a specific time that I really don't like because my schedule's all over the place. And if there's one thing I hate with training, it is having to race the clock because I'm not going to cut anything short.
Yeah.
So then I have to, make up for time sometimes and it's rough.
I remember Ron Partlow did a video. This is a few years ago. I can't remember what the situation was, but he was late getting to the gym and he shot a video of it. Or I think it was in the idea. The concept was get a quick workout in, like using that as his constraint. Like, I'm still going to kick ass, but now I have to make sure I get it done in 1 hour, or 45 minutes or whatever,
Yeah. I don't like that move. I'm not knocking him. If it gets to a point where I have to actually adjust the workout that much and can't just kind of speed it up or at least be consciously aware, okay, I have to make sure that I'm not, shooting the shit today. I may not do calves at the end or abs at the end. I'll push them to tomorrow. Something like that I can do. But I'm not one of those guys who goes in and goes, oh, you know what? I have an hour today instead of 2 hours. It takes me a long time to train. Y'all might train in an hour, hour and a half. I hear people talk about training in an hour.
Yeah.
I haven't trained in an hour and I don't know how many years. I always set aside 2 hours. And if I have to stretch, I have to stretch, which doesn't count in that time either.
Right.
So I just got to have that time because racing it just sucks. And, if I open with bench or I open with something that takes longer than usual or squatting, it just adds time to that. And rushing through is something that if something ever happens and I injure myself, I'd be pissed and I would immediately look at the fact that it was because I was rushing.
Yeah. No, I could see that. I've seen in my own training that maybe – I've sped it up, but then I also have accommodated by not using as much weight, keeping the sets faster. And then I've been like pleasantly surprised where I'm like, holy shit, I got a great pump. And, but if I were to think about it, like, it's not the way I'd want to train every workout, right?
Right. And it's a nice, it is a change of pace every now and then if you have to push that pace faster. If it's something lame like arms, different. Yeah. I have a day, my last day of the week is arms and calves. Well, I don't have many good body parts, but my arms are good and they're not gonna, it's not a weak point. It's not something like I'm like, oh my God. And same with my calves. So if I'm running a little late there and I have to push everything together, that's different. If it's legs where I have my lower back vulnerability that could be an issue and I'm not able to, stretch or something, no, that's just not gonna work. And that's one of the nice things with going down there as well. Not only do I have all that different and new equipment, but I also am not racing the clock because they're open 24 hours. Now, I'm kind of racing my wife because if it goes too long, she'll get kind of, irritated. Yeah. But, she understands and doesn't want me injured either. So she's pretty accepting of that.
I have to assume her workouts are not 2.5 hours, though, or her time in the gym.
She does every set. She matches every set. Matches me set for set.
Oh, does she? You guys train together. That's right.
Yeah. Yeah, it's something that I think she would rather not do from a time standpoint, but she also knows that when we train together, it's more productive for her, even though it takes longer. And the other part is because we go together, she's there anyway. Mm. So I've told her before when she was trying to do her own thing, you're not saving time. You're just spending more time on, your phone, touching base with the kids while I'm still training and you're done.
Yeah.
So it just doesn't work. She wanted to do her cardio for the first half hour that we were training and then catch up to me. And I'm like, come on, I'll wait on you. Let's train together. And the reason for that is so I have some kind of benefit as well because I want a training partner. I want to be able to go set for set. And it benefits her just as much as it benefits me. And then while she's doing her cardio, then I can be social and talk to somebody for face to face for the first time of the day.
Yeah, that is especially a weird thing.
Down to Miami. That's even better when we go down there because I don't know anybody. I know the owner Gio, who's cool as hell, and that's part of it. I get to talking to him when we first get there, and Melissa's like, you can talk to him when we're doing cardio. You can talk to him when I'm like, okay, all right.
That is a thing. Like when you're working from home and you're not, you don't go through your work day having encountered 2 dozen people that you've had conversations with. So you go to the gym. I don't know about you. I've taken some pre-workout and I'm all amped up and now it's like, and now there's people to talk to. I got to keep my focus.
Yeah. She doesn't like going to the grocery store with or the post office. Cause I just talk. And it's, in Colorado it was different because people talk and they're very, and I know everybody says it's because of fucking pot and everything, but the people there are just more interactive and they're more personable and they'll talk to you. South Florida is not like – it was the first thing that I noticed when I got here. You'll talk to people and they'll kind of look at you like, the fuck are you talking to me for? Why are you so talky-talky? So it's a different – it's just a different thing down here. I think it's because a lot of people are from New York. I don't know. They're from the Midwest. They're just not big talkers. I go back to Michigan. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
The girl at Target doesn't really give a shit for me to say hi to her. She's almost looking at me like, no, my life's miserable, pal. I think you're a little happier than I am. Go talk to somebody else.
Yeah.
It's like, fuck.
Yeah. What about you, Scott? I think people in the South and Texas, they're big talkers. And that if you say goodbye to somebody, that's like in Kentucky, when I went to go visit my grandma, the neighbor came over and it was like she was there for 3 hours. Just came over to have a conversation about something, 3 hours. And 2 hours in, she was like, all right, I'm going to get going. And then there was still another hour of her leaving. Scott, you want to chime in on that one?
No, we'll talk to people that are from here. But if you're not from here, we kind of don't talk to you that much at first. I guess people slowly intake people here.
Yeah.
There's the same little old grandmas and stuff. They'll talk to anybody, Skip.
Yeah.
If Skip showed up in the places where I run circles, people would probably be like, hey, good, talk to him for a few minutes. And once he left, he'd be like, can we get rid of this motherfucker? Never bring him back. But no, I don't know. I mean, I guess it just depends where you're at. I would say people aren't overly talky here.
Walter just chimed in. He says, he must not have heard our preamble. He said, does anyone know what S2H looks like?
I don't know why anybody. I mean, he looks just like that.
Yeah, you guys, just you can see him now, right? Walter. Just yeah, he's right there.
That thing on the right—that's a microphone, though. Just for the record. I don't want anybody getting to be like, God damn, for real, that's Scott.
I'm looking at the I'm looking at the live counter. We're in for 25 minutes. You guys want to take a break and come back and do some stuff, some bodybuilding stuff?
Let's take I gotta fill my water up.
I gotta do that.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well,
I don't have to now.
All right, guys, we're going to take a commercial break for the sake of the audio podcast, which is going to be available as the audio podcast always is. And this video will be put up at YouTube. Although this part's the commercial break part, that's not going to be cut out. So we're just going to be here. Do you guys need to use a restroom? Get some water. You said get some water, Scott?
Yep.
All right. We're going to take like a 2-minute break, guys, and stick with us or come back. And we are going to answer some questions. We've got questions from the Advices Forum. We've got a couple questions that people have asked in the thread here for the show. And I had something I wanted to ask Skip about sleep-wise. Because your sleep schedule is weird, isn't it?
It's a little different.
So Victoria was asking me this morning. Because I was saying that Skip wakes up like right before we do the show. And I said, but that's because he stays up all night. And it's because we've talked about it before. You like to do your check-ins and your writing at night. You know, people aren't going to be like emailing you back. You're not going to get caught in a bunch of conversations and distracted. So that's your main reason, right?
Well, the main reason is just because when I was out of control busy, a handful of years ago, and I only say that because I was running ragged and running crazy and trying to find balance. I was splitting my work over basically every 12 hours. So that's how it started, because I had clients all over the place. So, I mean, I'd have people in the UK or Australia that were just getting up at that time. And then from there, I just found, you know, my kids were young. It was so much quieter at night.
Yeah.
I could get so much more work done. I was just more productive and more efficient.
Yeah.
So then I started doing more of my work, more of my writing and things like that, because I was not interrupted.
And now you're just stuck with it.
The kids are gone. Yeah, exactly. Now that the kids are gone and I don't have to do that, I just have been in this routine for so long that it just works really well. So,
and if your health is okay, then, you know, more power to you. I know, because what her response was, and, you know, she is an expert in the field of hormones and health. She said shift workers that have to stay up at night, they're the number one people to have health concerns, just because it throws off, like, your circadian rhythm isn't meant to be up at nighttime, is what she was saying. People do it. People do it all the time, you know?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I would, it's too bad you can't have her on, because I'd have a slew of questions. Here's what I'm curious about. I know that the circadian rhythms and that sort of thing can play into it. There's, I don't know if it's guessing or if there's actual information that says that it is, but I think what plays a part more, and I'm asking when I say this, so it would be nice to hear back from her and whether she agrees with me or not. But I also think that when people do shift work, it's not as consistent as, say, what I do.
Okay.
As an example, I mean, I like people who do shift work sometimes will sleep during the day for the days that they work. But then if it's on the weekend and they have a family or they have fun, then they screw their sleep around on the weekend, and it's not the same. Me, 7 days a week, 12 months a year, for I don't even know how many years, I'm pretty routine and consistent to the point where I think, I would guess, that I am less of an issue when it comes to those types of things, because my body is actually in a consistent pattern or is kind of used to this consistent routine versus someone who bounces back and forth. The other thing with shift work is usually when people work shift work, even if they're consistent week to week, they only may work that shift work. You're a cop. You only have this rotation where you're on this shift work for maybe 2 or 3 months.
Or
sometimes it's a couple weeks at a time.
So you've been able to stick with it consistently.
For for so long, even on the weekends. I don't change it much on the I might get up a couple hours earlier. Yeah, I'll get up at 10 in the morning and be, you know, mumbling about it if I'm going to go to the beach with, you know, my friend and, you know, my wife or something like that.
Yeah.
But it doesn't change enough to where, like, oh, some people will even just stay up on the last day that they work.
They'll be like,
I'm just going to stay up all day. I mean, things like that will fuck you up. I can't imagine how it wouldn't.
Yeah.
Hormonally, you're sleep deprived for that day. Then you go to bed early the next night.
Right.
And then by the time it's time to work 2 days later, you're staying up for a long day again and you're exhausted. So things like that don't allow things like growth hormone and everything that plays into, you know, sleep and when you're supposed to. I totally get it, but I sleep like a rock.
Yeah.
I just, it's difficult for me to even wake up to an alarm. I usually wake up roughly the same time, but it's because I'm refreshed and I'm ready to get up. My body's ready to get up. How many people out there can say they don't wake up to an alarm? I get up to an alarm, seriously, for the show. That's it.
Okay. I just texted her and I asked her if you could ask her a question. So she's on her way, I think. Yep. She's coming right now. But she's only got like 2 minutes. So she's got to make a business phone call. So she'll have enough time to like answer one question, I think, if you have one.
And I'll just that's what I wanted to do was just throw that at her and see if it was any different.
Yeah.
Someone like myself who's consistent for a long period of time versus someone who that has to bounce around and, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Scott, does she get? She's not there yet, though, right?
No, she's upstairs. We set up an office for her. So she's got her own. She's got her own office up there right now.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's getting serious.
we are still on break, Scott, just so you know. But I guess we could come back now. Let's come back now.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I got my Mootopia. I'm good.
All right, guys. Welcome back to Blood, Sweat, and Gear. S2H Skip Hill. I'm Scott McNally. We have a bunch of questions at the forum that we are about to get to. But we're going to have a special guest here for just a split second, Victoria Falkar, because Skip had a question about shift working. I'm actually just going to give her the headphones here. The beautiful Victoria Falkar shall now take the mic.
It's tough. You only got a couple minutes because I really want to go into those red shorts that he's got on. They're way too short, inappropriate. But anyway, here's my question. I just threw this at Scott and the listeners. When you talk about the hormonal changes with people who work third shift, they work shift work, is it going to be different or less impactful on someone like myself who, even though I stay up all night, I'm in a routine 7 days a week, week after week, month after month for years, sleeping with this pattern. It doesn't get interrupted on the weekend. It doesn't get interrupted every handful of months. It's pretty much the same for years. So hormonally, am I, or from a health standpoint, am I in a better position than someone who works shift work, bounces around from shift to shift, or they screw it up on the weekend because they stay up with their family? You know, is there going to be a difference, or am I just screwed?
It depends, to be honest. It depends on how somebody's body is going to be able to convert like melatonin and serotonin from each other, knowing that like the pineal gland and light is such a huge impact on that. So for you, like, I don't know if you're doing light therapy, because that will help to at least mitigate a little bit of the kind of implications of that. So, I mean, there's so many different variables involved, though.
Very dark when I sleep. There's no light so that my body is tricked.
Yeah.
As far as light therapy, I'm not sure. But I mean, I get light and sunlight and things like that, but I don't know how to, you know, as far as sleep. But it is not light when I sleep. I'm actually in my office, which is off the side of my bed, and I'm looking.
Yeah. So, like, one of the things that I find that's really useful for people that are either working shift work or that have a flip schedule. Like, I did it for years. I was getting up at 3:30 in the morning. So one of the ways, though, that I would kind of trick my body and just trying to make a lesser impact of something that I know is very counterproductive of what my body should be doing was using an alarm clock that actually slowly, gradually goes bright into daylight. And then at the end of the day, for me, I'd be going to bed at like 7-ish. It would be slowly setting. So I could trick my body. And as a result, I'm actually changing the physiological process involved with that. Just because we know that the pineal gland is so, so, so visual, and that light has such a big impact on it. So it's like, it's a little tiny thing, but research now is telling us that makes a huge difference on it. And like, I'm not a sleep expert by any means. I can refer people out to people that are. Matt Walker is, I mean, he was one of like the visionaries in the sleep field. But from a hormonal standpoint too, if you get into the kind of that, it's could also depend on like what drugs you're on. I mean, progesterone, as we know, huge impact on sleep. So if somebody's already screwing with their progesterone and then they're not sleeping, well, that's a double-edged sword.
What about S2H having a really tiny pineal gland, from what I hear? Would a smaller pineal gland have any more impact than, say, someone like myself who has a very large pineal gland?
I don't even know where to start with that one.
No, I don't blame you.
I just take Ambien. It solves everything. So, on to the next question.
I just want to know if I was screwed. Well, I'm 49 years old. I haven't died yet, but I've been doing this for like 20 years, and it's so consistent that I would think, and it's just me guessing or trying to justify the fact that I'm going to die shortly, that there might be a difference.
Yeah, and consistency is a huge thing. Like if you're, I mean, that's one of the biggest things with trying to set the body up is that the body likes consistency. However, the body also works with like the natural circadians that we have on our earth. That's why more times people will sleep solid better in the winter, because it's darker. It's darker for more often. Even their light doesn't have, like their eyes don't get that much light, because just the way that the kind of conventional work day is created, people are going to work when it's still dark, and they're getting home when it's still dark. And that actually is detrimental for some people that have especially really bad sleep disorders. That's why they usually have higher rates of depression and everything else. In the summer, people are usually awake for longer because of that daylight hour. So our bodies, even though we like consistency, we still work on this like cyclical patterning like year after year. Now, for somebody like yourself, though, that's very, very regimented, who knows? That could be helping you to kind of navigate a little bit of the potential downfall of it. I think that the traditional, like, say, law enforcement, four on, four off kind of thing, I think that's probably one of the worst things you could do for your body.
Yeah, I agree.
And when you look at the research on it, it totally supports that.
Right.
Some of the stuff on, like, testosterone and sleep, it's insane how you can take somebody who is, like, a healthy male and just deprive them 2 to 3 hours and their testosterone starts to just plummet very, very rapidly. Right. And that's after like 2 weeks of just messed up. And it's not even complete flipping of a sleep schedule. It's just like reducing their sleep by 2 hours.
Now, what about the quality of sleep? Does that play into it? Because as an example, I sleep like a rock. Now, that's not my sleep tracker telling me or a sleep study. Yeah. It's me just knowing, oh my God, I only got up once last night. Like I slept and I opened my eyes and I was up, 8 hours later.
Yeah. Well, I think that like, especially now with like all the technology, like you've got things like Whoop that measures everything about somebody's sleep. That's such a small little piece, I think, of biofeedback. I mean, I've worked with people before and they're like, I slept like a rock, but my Whoop or my Fitbit or whatever says that I didn't actually get that much restful sleep. And I'm like, yeah, but how do you feel? I think all too often we get trapped in that technology and we stop actually asking ourselves what's going on. I mean, the same thing could be said about lab work. If somebody gets a melatonin screen done and it's like, in the norm, but they've also been manipulating their hormones and they've been using, say, exogenous melatonin on top of that, what does that number even mean at the end of the day?
Right. I tell you, it's too bad you only had a couple minutes, because honestly, you're much more interesting than Scott. And I think it would make for a better segment. Don't tell Scott. See, he doesn't have headphones on.
He can't hear me. It's so funny because I actually have to go to talk to a client of mine about sleep. So I've been working with him now for 2 years. And we're still slowly getting him back. But he's somebody who he actually flipped his sleep. He flipped his circadian. So instead of him having that normal cortisol curve, like that in the middle of the night, the dawn hours, he flipped his. And it's been a slow, slow, slow process. And honestly, I mean, you start mixing training and high performance athlete, all of that now plays into it, meal timing, digestion. But the one thing that has been so important to him is the routine. So going back to your kind of intro, the routine is important. And I think that you're probably, I can't say for sure, but a little bit ahead of those that do like the four on, four off kind of deal.
So I might make it to the weekend.
You have hope.
All right.
All right, guys.
Well, I've heard a lot about you. It was nice talking to you.
Nice to talk to you, too.
And we got to have you back on. You're absolutely far more exciting than Scott.
Bye, guys.
All right.
Don't tell him I said that either, you asshole.
Okay. I just fell asleep.
Hey.
Mm.
She's a lot smarter than me. I think she could take my position. You two could run this thing.
Oh, she's got a lot more never, things working for her.
I would never make a statement like that, ever, especially on air.
God. All right. Did you get some good information there? Did that help you?
I don't have a mouthful of oatmeal. You know what?
I'm going to stop talking to you.
I know.
I'll just stop talking to you. I'm going to go to the board here. I'm going to find the next question because I don't even know which one we were on. I'm going to start here, though. Question for S2H. Oh, this is from Bagel Ninja. He's been posting a lot of stuff lately. He's also from Europe. I can't remember where offhand. He says, question for S2H. I've heard you refer to essential minerals numerous times, usually in reference to middle of the night phone calls from Skip. I've done a little research, but I'd like to know what you suggest, and how to supplement with them.
In reference to just in general?
Well, I don't know. He says,
or that three-letter word that you brought up the last show we had
could be
that one.
I don't think he's running DMP. but he did say that he's heard you talk about it in reference to conversations about DMP, but I guess what you're actually, the reason you're asking is what? Because if you're using DMP, then your need for essential minerals is going to be different than what your need would be otherwise.
Oh yeah, it's way higher because your body's flushing them all out in that process. So, I mean, normally just a regular person, if you have a sound nutrition plan, diet, yeah, you don't really have to. You know, the only thing I would say is don't skimp on sodium as much as a lot of people tend to, you know, normal to taste stuff. But I don't think with a normal diet, I don't really advocate using it unless you have some type of deficiency prior. You know, like you've got some issues. Some people that have some renal kidney issues will have deficiencies in sodium and other minerals that get flushed out. But if you're just a normal, healthy person, I just say if you eat a normal diet, you pretty much cover all that. Backside of that is sometimes people that tend to be on some alternate diets, let's just say they don't eat a lot of meat, red meat at all or anything, they could probably supplement, may need to, may not. Or just get your labs and check them. But yeah, on the three-letter word, yeah, you've got to supplement them or you'll end up on your back porch at 1 in the morning. So, but yeah, you know, but that's a very precise plan. So don't just think you can go grab some potassium and some sodium and a few oddball stuff and go, oh, I can figure this out, because you won't. It has to be very precise.
Okay. Skip, Scott mentioned sodium. Do you run into a lot of people that try to pull their sodium out? Because I'll find people that, like, they start cramping, and so I ask them, I'm like, well, what does your salt intake look like? And the first thing they tell me is, like, they get defensive almost, and they're like, oh, no, I don't use a lot of salt. Like I'm going to tell them, like, they thought I was going to say you're using too much. Oh, I keep salt down real low. I try to keep it under control. I don't add any salt to any of my foods.
Women are worse than men.
Yeah.
I think there's still this thought process running around out there, because a lot of trainers do still use and control sodium for some reason. I've heard ridiculous protocols where, you know, the women will start decreasing their sodium at 4 and 6 weeks out, and if that's what their coach is telling them. I know that that's not exactly what we're talking about, but still, yeah, women are worse than men when it comes, because I think it's cutting out sodium, I'm not going to hold water, and that'll work for a week or 10 days. And as soon as your sodium gets adjusted even lower and your intake's lower, as soon as it comes back up to normal levels because you have a cheat meal or you go out with friends and have drinks and eat something you don't normally eat, all of a sudden you're holding a ton of water. So it's just a bad idea. Sodium has so many other great positive things for training anyway. You know, good luck getting a pump when your sodium levels aren't as high. The contractile force in the muscle itself, and muscles just don't contract as hard. I've heard people say before shows, oh, I was backstage, and you know, not only could I could get a pump, but my muscles were just soft. You know, that's the, just such a it's a neon sign that you don't have enough sodium. So when you have enough sodium, muscles are contracting real, real hard. Excuse me, I'm burping oatmeal. That's awesome too. Awesomely professional. So yeah, it, you know, I've had, I remember back in 06, and I know it was 06 because I had moved to Michigan briefly for 6-7 months. I had moved back home and, I ran an experiment where I increased, I was going to see how high I could get my sodium levels, and I would increase them by a gram every, roughly every 2 weeks. And I got up to 7 grams a day, and I was so ridiculously full. But if I turned my head, I would start sweating profusely.
Really?
And I'm a heavy sweater anyway, even when my sodium levels aren't as high. So I backed it off to about 5. My sweet spot was about 5,000 milligrams a day. And if you take in, for those who don't know, and I would hope that a lot of people do know, you take in the recommended or the amount of water that you're supposed to be taking in, your body flushes sodium out of your system very, very efficiently, sodium that you don't need. But if you're taking in sodium like that, you also have to make sure that you routinely and consistently are getting the amount of water that you're supposed to. Otherwise, high levels of sodium like that, obviously, it'll drive your blood pressure up, or can drive your blood pressure up, but it's going to make you hold water. So push it through, and it's great. You'll remain full all the time. Your pumps will be great. Your muscles will feel hard when they contract. It's a good gig.
Yeah, that makes total sense to me. I'm looking at Martin here. He's got a question. Martin Bett, 247. He says, I've heard and read that once you start using testosterone, you'll have to use it for the rest of your life. There's a weird buzz I'm hearing. It's from Scott, actually.
No, it's not.
No, yeah, it is. It's in your, I think it's in your cord, your bad cord. Every time it's a,
I got it. It was a fly.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is.
Yeah, it might be in your cord. We can talk about it later.
Why do I always get blamed for fucking audio shit?
I'll tell you why I know it was you.
It'll be in my contract again next time.
Says, right,
go ahead. Continue.
You may and read that once you start using testosterone, you'll have to use it for the rest of your life. Is this true? I've heard Dave Palumbo state that he doesn't use any test, and he used lots of it when he competed. Can you clarify, please? Either you guys are welcome to jump in on this one.
I got something for him.
What do you got for him?
So I went, hold on, let me do the math on this. 17, 18 years on at least TRT. And then I did my little up and down thing, like, you know, last couple of year, took some, didn't. So now I've been off, I think, for like almost 5 months. And I had my blood drawn, and I was 578.
Really?
NGDNL. Yeah, I can get a Woody. I'm good. Busting nuts. I'm a player, man. So, yeah, in my witness protection program. But, no, 578. How about that?
That's good.
That would be way more than 17 years of use, but 17 on just on replacement.
Yeah.
Minimum. Excuse me. So, yeah. So, I don't know. I guess maybe I'm just superhuman or something.
Yeah.
I think it's a blanket statement. I think when somebody says that, they're trying to just tell people if you're going to be on testosterone for any length of time, that it's very possible or that it's likely.
Yeah.
Almost in a warning sort of way.
Yeah.
That you could come back to very low levels of testosterone that will make you want to stay on testosterone, because it may not shut you down. It may not be ridiculously low, but it's unlikely. You know, Scott's situation is relatively unlikely.
Yeah.
Though it can certainly happen. Usually if you come back, and I think the longer you're on, the worse it can be. The older you get, the worse it can be. But if you come off all testosterone or all cycling or even TRT, I would say the large majority of people are not going to be in the high normal range for testosterone. They're going to be very low, if not even below the low normal range. So I think it could be stated you know, better by the people who are saying that. I don't think it's you take testosterone, you cycle, and you might as well just get used to being on, you're going to need to be on testosterone for the rest of your life. I think that's an inaccurate and not true statement.
Yeah.
Yep.
That makes sense.
Well, I think it's, I got to retake again. I mean, I don't know. I could have, you know, the levels can vary too. You could bounce back a little bit. I mean, 578 is not setting the world on fire, but for somebody my age, that's actually a pretty okay number.
Yeah, I agree.
So, I could go a month later or 2 months later and go again. I might be back to my 98 or whatever ungodly number I've had before. So I don't really know, but, you know, we'll see. I feel pretty good. You know, I'd just say I feel normal. That's the best way to put it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Okay, we dealt with this question on another one of the shows, and he posted it here too. This is Matt Bell. He's a longtime listener. He says, a question regarding an upcoming cycle. I am planning on running TNE, Prop, Trenace, and EQ. I'm planning on running 350 milligrams of TNE, 350 milligrams of Prop, 350 Tren Ace, and 600 EQ per week. My question is regarding the frequency of the TNE injection. This is test based in oil. Just to be clear, would it be recommended to do 50 milligrams every day of TNE, or could I get away with every other day injections of 100 milligrams TNE? There's a lot of conflicting info regarding TNE on various boards and forums. I would greatly appreciate your thoughts on the matter. I've been posting this on the Drugs and Stuff Q&A thread. Big fan and longtime listener, Matt Bell. And just, to, you know what, I'll clarify too for anybody who's listening, because we do have some new guys that are really like here to educate themselves and learn how to do their first cycle. So TNE is test no ester, meaning that it's just going to be instant, right, Skip? Like this is just going to be out the gate. There's no ester. It's not gonna release over a period of time. Like you take it and you got it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just got done using it. I used it for 4 weeks, and even though I expected more from it than I actually got, I think wasn't mine combined. It's bad that I have to ask you guys.
Yeah, you had
Yeah, I thought so too. It was combined with Anadrol. And you know what? I expected more than what I got, but I can't say that it sucked. It didn't suck. I expected to want to, and I'm paraphrasing, go into the gym and rip babies' heads off and murder people. I think isn't that the explanation someone gave me? S2H.
No, I didn't say that.
It was something to that effect. Anyway, it didn't, you know, I was certainly more aggressive. I'll tell you what I found. When I realized, and I've taken shit for a lot of years. I mean, we all know, it's been a long time. And one of the things that I finally noticed was I was like, wow, I have a really short fuse. I wasn't snapping on people, but I could just find myself irritated in just a couple seconds about so almost scowling like, what the fuck? Like, why? And I had to laugh to myself. I'm like, oh, shit. This is the subtle sign. These are the subtle signs of the TNE combined with the Anadrol. But going back to the dosing, I mean, if he's going to question taking it every other day, some with no ester, I would assume S2H will back me up, but if not, correct me. You're going to want to hit something like that immediately before you train. And I did, and I think I benefited from it. I don't know what the vehicle is that Matt has with his delivery system, but once levels started to build after that third and fourth week, you guys remember me complaining, tasted, it would end up in my mouth.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it just was, and it would happen like within, you know, 60 seconds, and it sucked. It was very metallic. It wasn't like Tren, it was different, but it was the same in the sense that it was kind of metallic tasting.
Yeah.
And I did not like it, especially the last part of that last week of those 4 weeks. I dreaded taking that. And I get a cough, much like a Tren cough towards the end, but I didn't have it for the first couple weeks.
I've gotten that before too. It's not pleasant. And that smell, there's something different. I don't know what the oil is or the, you know what they use? What is that, Scott?
Glycol.
Glycol.
Is that what it is? Why did I want to say Ethel Oleate?
No, how did it go in? Did it give you a little lump and sting a little bit, or was it not stingy?
You know, I don't remember any of the injections being stingy. They would, you know, as I kept hitting the same places, it would get a little knotty. I was going ventral gluteal. Mm-hmm. But I think that was just from frequent, you know, I was hitting them every day. And I won't hit one side. I won't alternate sides because I'm not going to have one hip tighter than the other when I have a history of chronic lower back. So if I have 1 mil that's due, actually this time I may have done that. Fuck, my memory is so bad. Was it
dark like regular gear? Or was it real light looking?
It's real light.
It might have been. It was probably EO then, or with our glycol. Yeah, did it smell?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Very distinct smell. Yeah, and it would, like I said, that taste, I'm not going to forget that taste.
It didn't taste like me then, right?
No, it didn't.
Carl Lenore chimed in. He was like, why is Scott in the dark? And then he came back a minute later because I think he was concerned. He was like, Scott, close the blinds behind you. He was trying to fix your lighting for you.
Well, it's so close right now.
we have it.
Yeah, we can almost have it right. Yeah. That's funny.
All right. I'll move on to the next question here. Let's see. He says, hey, guys, quick question about kettlebells. This is from, I don't even know how you say his name. Incambron. Oh, I don't even know. But anyway, though, it's a bunch of letters all combined with a one, with a brawn at the end on the message board. He says, hey, guys, quick question on kettlebells. Do any of you program kettlebell work for your clients? Kettlebell swings seem to be a great way to do HIIT training without beating up the legs too bad. I was curious what your thoughts were. Also, I heard Mark Joyce say that machine pressing can lead to bad elbows if your elbows drift out from under the handles. I've never heard that before, but am experiencing that myself. How would you tell if your elbows tell where your elbows are without a partner? Thanks a bunch, guys. So I guess we'll just tackle these two things separately. Two questions to start with, the kettlebells. I've never done anything with kettlebells outside of like a plié squat, standing on a step on each side so I could drop the kettlebell down lower and get like a real low, real wide plié squat with just because a kettlebell was there and it weighed like 90 pounds. But outside of that, I've never done anything specifically with them. How about you guys?
I thought it was called a PAS squat.
A what?
PAA.
PAA?
When you squat down between the with the benches on both sides.
I think it's plié if you're in ballet.
Yeah, plié squat. You do like a, it's like a plié.
Yeah, we call it.
I think it is plié.
PAA. Anyway, back to the point. Yeah, I actually like kettlebells, but not for like kettlebell stuff. Yeah. So like shrugs and stuff, and I think it's easier to hold on to a kettlebell, and you can get more stretch out of them.
Is it a kettlebell? Like, or a bell?
Yeah, a bell. The thing with the thick fucking thing over it like this, the hook. Yeah, I mean, I like him because he likes side raises and stuff. I mean, for me, I don't know. You can manipulate your wrists and stuff different. So I think I like him for certain things. Now, the traditional chuck them between your legs and no, I don't do any of that stuff. So
okay. Skip, yeah. I have a feeling you're not a fan of these things at all. Like you no. do. They if it didn't exist in like 1991 in the gym, then you don't need it, right?
Well, they shouldn't exist. I think they were lifted in the last time in like 1892. And then all of a sudden somebody thought, well, these need to come back. You know, I can see where they've got this little cute handle where you can hold on to it and do a squat. And no offense to you, because, you know, I'm sure you look really cute doing it.
Thank you.
But I don't program. More cowbell, no kettlebell. That's how my programming is. That's my best advice. But I want the next part of the question big time.
Yeah, so the elbows, what did he say? What was it? He said elbows that drift out from under the handles. If your elbows drift out.
Mm-hmm. Here's what it is. I'm jumping ahead of Scott on this one because I really want this one. I tell this to people all the time. What he really mean, and he can correct me if the poster or the person that asked the question, if this is not what he meant, then by all means correct me. But I think what it is this. A lot of people, when they use a machine, especially a pressing machine, especially when it's on an incline, and even more so when it's an overhead shoulder press, their elbows don't follow the natural path of the machine. And I don't know why. Mm-hmm. I don't know what they're doing, and they're doing it probably subconsciously, whether it's attempting to, you know, drive their elbows back farther for more range of motion. I don't know. But even on occasion, I'll have to remind my wife on an overhead machine press, it's an unnatural, your elbows are too far back. It's unnatural. It's right. Almost as if doing a shoulder press, you're trying to get this range of motion for your chest or upper chest. I don't know. But I'm assuming that that's what he's talking about. So the elbows need to, basically I've always said the elbows need to follow the path of the bar, but more importantly or more accurately, it would just be that they need to be following the path of the wrist. If your elbows are not following the path of the wrist on a press, I'm using a press just as the primary example, because you would probably have more, you know, you could get away with something different if it were a pulling movement, that would be a little bit different. But with pressing, it just turns into a bad angle. I don't know how it would be bad. Like, I don't know if it, you know, put pressure on the, you know, the rotator cuff or anything like that, which it very well could, but it's just unnatural. I mean, if you just think about it, no one's going to see me doing this, but you're doing an overhead dumbbell press. And if you just hold your hands in the air and you look to your side, your elbows will naturally be under, there you go, naturally be under your wrist. Now, flare those elbows way back. Yeah. There you go. And you can't do that with a dumbbell or a barbell because it wouldn't balance, but you can get away with it with a machine, but you're pushing then against the arc of the machine.
Yeah.
And it just, there can be, you can get torque that way. You could have torque issues, I guess. I don't know exactly how to explain it or what the actual, vulnerability is with the elbow, but I can certainly see it. It may well be bicep tendon where the bicep tendon attaches, you know, in the elbow. I don't know. That's my best guess. So please don't take that as my answer and message us and say I'm a fucking moron. If you want to call me a moron, there are plenty of other reasons that are legit to call me a moron.
We're getting the comments coming in. Juan says, why is S2H in a dark background? Is he on the run? Like everybody, that's the one thing everybody noticed is that.
But you know, you have to listen to the opening of the show, people. You're here. You got to the party too late.
Yeah. Stick around though.
Stick around. He has to remain anonymous. The DEA may be in the bushes casing his place, but it's not the place. It's not the place he's in now. There he has relocated. He is a masterful, very stealthy host of podcast host, I guess.
I'm actually in Skip's apartment with his wife. He didn't know. That's only a story.
You're in the back part of her office.
Hey, on that elbow thing, real simple. So like Skip said, the elbows follow the wrist. There's a natural width everyone has. So once you get inside or outside of that width, and I'm going to put it to bench pressing. Once you get in or outside of your width, I'll give you better. A lot of guys try to bench too narrow, and when they start getting stuck, they start to creep their elbows out. It's a natural reaction because you're not on the same your natural plane. So when you grab a bar, a machine, or whatever, you need to take a natural grip. So reach out and grab it. Don't even think about it. And that's the normal way you would push or do a push up. It was a good example or anything. When you start getting too wide or too narrow, your elbows want to travel out because it's not the natural plane that your arms go out at.
And hammer presses are terrible for that. When you see skinny, this is, and we've all seen this. Skinny dudes love hammer press machines because they can get more plates on the machine than they would on a bar. When you see like a kid with three plates on each side, there's no way that kid is bench pressing 315 on a regular bar. It's kind of a given, and we know that. Yeah. But what happens is if you look at their grip every single time, and we were to compare, say, their grip to someone like myself, I go as wide as I can possibly go, And they're going as narrow as they can possibly go. And of course, their reps are almost always abbreviated and they're not deep and that sort of thing. And it's because with those machines, people tend to, instead of making the machine or the movement as difficult and beneficial as possible, they err on the side of the ego where they just like the machine primarily because they can get more plates on it.
Yeah.
Well, that the incline hammer machine is designed for a reason. It's designed to put you in the perfect position if you were flat bench pressing and you knew what the hell you were doing. A competitive lifter. It does.
Yeah.
It pushes the scapula together. It pushes the rear delts back together, the traps together, and it creates a wedge. Mm-hmm. And that thing is like the perfect machine for people to put a lot of weight on and think they can lift a lot of weight. Mm-hmm. It does. It puts you in the perfect position. So if you ever want to compete in bench press, go get on the incline hammer machine and go, hey, this is how I should set up on the bench when mm-hmm. I lay flat.
Well,
just making a little jackhammer. Everything's crunched together in the back like a little wedge. And you can go, then you can mm-hmm. figure it out. But you won't lift what you will. Yeah, I bet you most people can do about half of what they can do on an incline hammer.
Yeah. Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah. Yeah.
Scott's like, shit, I got to quit using that machine. I feel so bad on it. So big and bad.
It is. No, he wasn't listening at all. He was reading comments off Facebook.
It is funny that people do want to load those things up. I know that when I've trained with Shelby and we've used maybe not like a hammer brand machine, but like we have this one incline press. It's at Royal Oak Gym. No. It's at Highland Park Powerhouse, and they have one at Novi Powerhouse. I can't remember who makes it, but it's this incline hammer-style press that you load with plates. And when you press up, it's a real steep incline. When you press up, not only are you pressing up, but you're kind of like pressing together at the same time. I see guys that are using like four plates on this thing and just like pumping them out. Shelby uses like two quarters, three quarters, and we did like, you know, slow negatives, 15 counts, you know, like 15 reps. And it's like, it's brutal. You can like really get a lot out of it, not using a ton of weight doing that kind of stuff. And it's brutal. But yeah, then the next guy comes up and he's like, you know, he's one of those guys you were talking about earlier, Skip, the guys that are retired. He's got a towel around his neck, newspaper under his arm, doing a couple sets, reading the paper, pumping up four plates on each side for a dozen reps and then sitting there for a half hour.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Like that.
They got him in every gym.
Joanna McCann. Do you know who that is? Joanna.
I know vaguely who that is. Yeah. She's her and her husband are awesome. I work with both of them.
After Juan made that comment about S2H with the dark background and being on the run, Joanna came in and said, on the flip side, Skip's teeth are bright, bright white. Let's see those teeth. They are, dude. They look really bright.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love that because that's an issue of mine. That's like an insecurity of mine.
Oh, really?
Yes, it is. And I'll tell you why. Because I chewed for 14 years and then I started a week and a half ago again and I just had to quit again.
You quit? Yeah. Wait, you started a week and a half ago and then you already quit?
Here's the thing. I thought you were going to bust my balls for it when we were testing the other day because I had one in and I was spinning. And you know what? I had a can sitting there and I jumped on it. I quit for 6 months. I had no reason to go back to it, but I just did. It's one of those things that I always enjoyed doing, just like Scott there. I know. He's a pouch guy. He's a pouch. He doesn't even put a rub in. He just puts a little pouch in. But I'll tell you right now.
Between the cheek and gum.
Yeah, I would take a pouch right now, and I'd be happy to do it. I've got a can sitting here.
Do it. Come on, do it.
That's not supportive. That is so incredibly negative.
Quitter, do it. Quit.
Misery loves company.
What made you start back up? It
wasn't really anything. It's funny because I kept four cans in my peanut butter cabinet. And my wife kept saying, she's like, you should just throw them away. I'm like, am I going to throw them away? I'll give them to, you know, Tate, or I'll give them to somebody who comes in who chews because, I mean, they're like $6 a can. And I told her, I'm not going to like just grab one and start chewing. This is a reminder that they're sitting here. And if any time I want to chew, I can chew. I'm choosing not to. It's kind of what I do with alcohol. I didn't quit drinking 9 years ago because I was an alcoholic or and I don't consider myself sober. I just didn't want to drink. And now it's been so long, I just don't drink for like consistency purposes. I just don't need to. And one night, I didn't have a shitty day. I didn't have anything. I looked, I was like, oh, and I wanted to crack one open and smell it. And I laughed at myself. I'm like, oh man, I quit for 6 months. I'm going to have me a rut. And just didn't even, I'm like, I don't even, you know, it's not like I don't care, but it's like, I quit for 6 months. I can quit again. And Scott will tell you, I'm like, after a week, I was like, oh, yeah, I'll just quit. And I'm like, no, I'm going another week. You know, it starts to turn into like you're not in the gym and you're trying to get back in the gym.
Yeah.
So average people who we always look at and we say, oh, I don't know, understand why you continue to not get back into the gym. It's that sort of feeling. It's like, oh, what's another week? What's another few days? Mm-hmm. And I always love a rub a cope. I love it.
Yeah, I don't think you're gonna like ever not love it. You know what I mean? That's the problem with it. Yeah. Like it's always going to be amazing, you know?
Sucks. And amazing. I'm not addicted to too much, you know, like I said, I don't care if I drink. Caffeine I could take or leave. It really doesn't matter. I only picked up coffee because when I quit chewing years ago, it was something. You gotta give up something for something else. It wasn't a fair trade by any means.
Yeah.
But going back, I'm like, I just don't care about stuff like that. But nicotine, I love when I'm getting to the gym and I know it's time, I take out a rubber, or when I'm done and I'm going to drive home and I'm leaving Miami Iron or I'm leaving Titan and I drop a rubber copy and I'm like, it's like a fucking reward or something, man.
A reward for life.
Yeah, for life. Just doing things right in the gym for 2 hours. So yeah, I'm not very proud of it. But that's part of the issue with my teeth is I want them to be – I don't think that they're very white. What happens is because I'm so tan, yeah, it probably makes my, you know, leg – or my leg. I'm actually thinking that's why my dick seems so small. It's just because my legs are really big. And that was crossing over into this this explanation about my teeth. But I don't think they're terribly white. It's just my tan. But I'm happy to hear that. So – yeah, that's awesome.
Hardy. I have one thing I have to have every day, and that's I have to have a Coke Zero on ice in a styrofoam cup.
Really?
I will actually like get cross-eyed with somebody, but when I have to have one, so, and I usually have two.
So you not only want the Coke Zero, but you also want to destroy the environment too with the styrofoam. Like that's part of it. If you're not destroying the environment, it's not.
He's from Texas. Yeah. Doesn't care about the environment.
But no, I do. I mean, it has to be on ice though, in a styrofoam cup from a taco stand.
Okay, so from an addiction standpoint, what is the addictive part? Is it the routine of it, or is it the caffeine in it? Is it the carbonation? Because I don't like carbonated shit. It burns my throat.
I love.
Well, I don't drink coffee. I don't drink energy drinks. I don't drink like caffeinated stuff. So I think it's kind of like. It runs in the family. My mother has the same problem because she drinks regular Coke. Well, she drinks the Mexican Cokes in the glass bottles. So they got more sugar. They got different sugar in them.
And it's better sugar.
Yeah. Well, you can buy those here everywhere. But yeah, so I drink Coke Zeros, but it's like, I guess it may be the caffeine because it's like after I drink one, I'm like, ooh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's like popping.
There's an amino acid in there too that increases like your sense of well-being. I forget which one it is.
Phenylalanine.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Crown Royal?
Yeah, I think you're right. Crown Royal. I'll tell you though, that stuff is addictive because I just quit drinking soda and I was drinking a lot of it, but I realized in the evening time, instead of drinking water, I'd just be like, well, I want a soda. And so I'd just keep drinking and I'd have a 2 liter and I'd just keep drinking that all night instead of drinking water. I'd wake up the next morning and go to pee. The first time I'd pee, it'd be like dark, dark yellow, like ugly, you know? And I realized
just one.
Yeah. See, and I don't want to keep it around. So I quit altogether. And I could tell you, like, I miss it in the evenings, especially, or when I'm eating food, I'm like, man, I want a Coke with this Coke Zero. There's something to that. It really is addictive.
If I'm eating something salty and fatty, like if I'm having pizza or barbecue, I had barbecue again for the second week yesterday. It was freaking awesome. So I'm eating ribs. I'm eating all shit. I do want something carbonated, so that I can relate to. But it burns my throat for the first couple swallows of it. It just doesn't feel right. And I don't know if it's the carbon. It had to be the carbonation. But I love to – in a situation like that, I guess that's different. Something salty. But then it's a bitch because the salt makes you thirsty. Yeah. And then you're drinking soda, which doesn't do shit. Everybody's like, oh, it's got water in it. Yeah, it's like when you carbonate it, it like makes it non-water anymore. I don't even know because it just makes you more and more thirsty. But it's quenching the thirst while you're drinking it.
Yeah.
Until you're done drinking it.
Then you need more. You just need another one.
And then you're peeing and you're like, God, my piss really smells. It doesn't smell right.
Right, right.
Yeah, because it's coming out as lotion. That's why.
Nice. Well, I got to drink one other thing. Well, I just drank one. My one glass of Mootopia every day.
Mootopia?
The hell is that?
Is that milk?
It's chocolate milk, isn't it?
Yeah, it's chocolate milk. Oh, wow. They have it at one kind of grocery store here. It's their brand. It's called Mootopia, and it's got like a shitload of protein in it, which justifies it.
Mootopia from a brand name?
Well, it's a grocery chain. Yeah, so I mean, it's like they own the milk plant. So it's like I take this little glass here. It's about, I don't know, 7 ounces, 8 ounces, and I have my one glass of Mootopia in the morning.
Yeah,
I think in one that glass, it's got 19 grams of protein, 20.
Well, I just know the big chocolate one I get to wash down my donuts because, you know, I did have – and I haven't had donuts in a long time. But we stopped last night on the way home, Melissa and I, and I've got a great story of racing a kid in a car. It was a lot of fun. But anyway, it's too long. We stop at the Dandy Donut Place because we've never been there before, and I want to get a dozen donuts to take home, and I get this giant – like it's not giant, but it's like a, I don't know, a liter of chocolate milk. There's 1,000 calories in that chocolate milk.
Oh, my God.
1,000 calories. Shit, is it good to wash down donuts with, though? Oh, my God, I love chocolate milk.
Yeah, I mean, Mootopia, though, the thing with it, it's a little thicker than regular milk.
I like
You get it, like, really cold. Like, fill the glass up and shove it in the freezer for, like, 5 minutes.
Yep.
And then it has, like, they make it in vanilla, regular, chocolate, and I think they have, like, a 2%er, which sucks.
Yeah.
And then you just... It's I don't know it but it has less sugar and stuff. Well, it has shit that converts though, so it's not fooling nooah. But I don't care. I'll send you a picture of it, Skip Scott, later. But yeah, this stuff's rocking. It's expensive though.
Mootopia.
Yeah, it's for a half gallon. It's $5, $4.99.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah, but I drink it anyway.
We have just a couple more questions at the forum. So guys. Everybody listening right now, go when you get a chance, check out the advices forums because this is where we take all our questions from. And as you can see, it gives us an opportunity to kind of keep creating content and keep conversation going here. So think of some good questions for us. It literally takes like 2 minutes to sign up for the forum. And that way, too, all the questions are in the same place. We have a few questions that were on the threads we posted. I have one from Instagram here I'm about to go to. But you'll head over there. To the forum, and we will be sure to get your stuff up. Enough time for a couple more questions here. UC Suma says, hardcore mentality for everyone, for everything, diet, training, and work. Have we become softer overall as a society, or is it social media driving that perception? It feels like people who step up and do what they need, what they say they need to do, to bust their asses, to sweat and bleed, to achieve a goal, are becoming rarer by the day. People aren't working as hard. Do you have any thoughts on that, Skip Hill?
Funny thing that came up the other day with, because both Scott and I, we're all going to think the same shit because we're all old.
Right.
So we'll be like, oh, this generation, get off my lawn. I write articles like this all the time. But here's the thing. One of the kids – I saw a comment on one of my kids' Facebook the other day, and it made me question. I don't know if I asked my wife or my wife asked me. I don't remember. But it was something about – someone called another kid a dude. I think it was a dude. And I remember thinking to myself
– Wait, it jumped a little bit for me. You called him a what?
It was one kid called another kid a what I think is a do-gooder. That was the term. Yeah.
Okay.
And so I checked on it more. I asked my wife, or she asked me. I can't remember. We checked on it. And what the kids are doing right now is they're harassing each other or picking on each other for giving too much effort doing things.
Oh, wow. Really?
What a bizarre – yeah. And I don't remember the term. I think it was do-gooder.
Yeah.
But I can't remember exactly. But the point was, it was that type of point. It was like way too much effort. Like you only do things that come easy to. And this just blew my fucking mind. But yet I had to laugh because, you know, being my generation, and I'm sure the generation before us thought the same thing. So I'm not going to feel bad saying it. As these generations come up, we pick at them because they seem to be lazier and want to do less. And of course, technology, and they've got it so easy, and they didn't have to walk to school 5 miles uphill both ways, things like that. I do think that it is society itself, but that every generation does that to the next generation. They never worked as hard as they did, that sort of thing. Yeah. But I also think that there's a component to social media just in the fitness industry that is making people, and I do have a problem with that. I don't talk about it much because I feel like it sounds like I'm whining. But I will tell you that I have a huge, huge problem with social media where people aren't really good at what they do. Well, they're not, it's not that they're not good, but they don't, they're not better than anybody else who's doing what they're doing. And they're saying 98% of the same things that have been said and re-said, but yet they're somehow making a really good living and getting a shit ton of attention because it's coming out of someone else's mouth.
Yeah.
And for someone who's been around a long time and have paid my dues, and, you know, I would never go so far as to say, use the word pioneer because it's not pioneering, but I will say I was early and I was around from the start. And to see these things is really, really bothersome. It does irritate me. Should it? Maybe it shouldn't. Does it impact me to the point where I lose sleep? No, it doesn't. But I don't like it. I don't like it, and I know it's only going to get worse.
We have a couple. Scott, I'm going to tell you, we have a couple more questions, and one of them is kind of funny, but I want to hear what you have to say here.
Yeah, let me add on this. So in life, people that are successful in anything, the majority of the time, so I'm going to throw something, like 95% of the time, have to work hard for it. And I think a lot of things I see is people come out of this get fast, not to do stuff mentality at a young age, and they get in the real world, in a corporate environment, whatever environment, and they realize, hey, there is no getting by, just sliding by, barely getting by. So in the context of what he was asking, I think the people that are – the majority of people that are more successful in anything, including powerlifting, bodylifting, work very hard at it. But I will context that with – just like in life, you can burn yourself out if you just go, go, go. So everybody's got to have a break period. Like when I was really lifting hard, doing things, I always took from Thanksgiving to the first January 2nd off. I would go to the gym a little bit, but I would just tone everything way down. That was my little break period. It would be supplements, whatever. And I would just take that little month and a quarter or whatever it was and just kind of just lay off things. So I think you can go too hard too. It's like in business or anything. If you can run yourself in the ground too.
Yeah.
But hard work is where will pay off in anything.
I feel like people have always given people shit for trying too hard, or you know, like you know, or like being too. I'm almost thinking of like a do-gooder. What about like there's kind of like a relationship there to like a goody-goody, you know what I mean? Like somebody who's like oh, you're like you know, you're whatever, you know, you're just trying to be like such a nice person, or you know, like, oh, you're the, I don't know, what am I trying to say here, Skip? You see what I'm getting at?
I think the other thing, and this is what I would relate it to and ask you if it's the same thing or if you mean the same thing. You know, there's a lot of people who say are, you know, go on dating sites like eHarmony and things like that, and they make it a point in their profiles to say, you know, I work out, but I'm not a gym rat. Or I'm not addicted to the gym. And basically what they're saying is, yeah, I'm not that guy in there. I'm not that meathead who's super huge. So I don't ever really know how to take it. I don't know if they're saying, hey, you know, I'm not the meathead, dickhead, narcissistic guy, or if they're just saying, you know, I just want other people to know that I might be dating, that I really do like it and I value that I'm in, you know, good shape and that I'm active, but I don't take it to an extreme. I never really know how to take it.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this. First of all, how many guys' dating profiles are you looking at on eHarmony?
And I said eHarmony, but it's really Tinder.
Or Grindr.
You know what's funny? The guy that started that went to a gym I used to go to.
Oh, is that right? Well, he's still rich now. I'm sure he's got his own gym.
Right.
Yeah.
Damn. I was thinking of like think back to even like school. People would call you like, you're a nerd if you tried too hard, if you did too good. Oh, you know, you won the spelling bee. You're a real nerd. Like, you're not going
to
get.
Yeah, but is that an effort thing? That doesn't cut directly to effort. That's almost
okay.
You know what I mean?
But is there a relationship there?
Maybe I'm looking at it differently because I'm older and maybe, I don't know. I just took it for the effort part and I thought, Because I could think of myself in school, and I would think to myself, someone who was really good at sports or worked really hard was not someone that I would think, oh, he's a dumbass because he works. Like I would tell a girl about another, oh, he's a dumbass because he works too hard. You know, he should be less athletic like me and who just doesn't even try. It's just such a weird. But yet, then again, like I said, I'm not surprised because I can, once you think about it, it just kind of makes sense to the point where, yeah, I guess, the next generation is looking, we just feel like the next generation is not working as hard. They're looking for the easy way out, that sort of thing. But again, I think that's just, it's an oldism. I never said that when I was younger. I didn't look at other people and judge whether they were working hard or not working hard. I don't know. I did it when I got older, I guess.
Skip, do you have like a blow-up doll or something you're talking to in your room? Because you're like looking off in the other direction.
You know what I'm trying to do? I'm going to be honest with you. These lights are killing me.
Really?
So when I look up here, they're just blazing.
Oh, they're too bright then.
My eyes. And that's why now I'm finding myself look around much more because I know.
I'll help you with the setup. I have a suggestion for you. I think I have an idea that might work. This guy, Sambo. He commented on the post for Advice's Instagram. This dude's a trip. I don't know who this guy is, but he seems funny. And it's just, I'm looking at his profile picture. He seems like he's a character. Anyway, he says, bodybuilding, or maybe guys that go from enhanced to natural and y'all's thoughts on it, not the whole PCT spiel. Let's say test levels are everything else level. I'm having a hard time reading this.
You noticed.
A little bit of grammar issues here. I'm sure that it sounded right in his head when he, it's a very conversational and maybe a little Southern. We should have you interpreting this one, Scott.
Where is it on your Instagram?
Mental aspects. I don't know. But he has a follow-up question, which is, and he says, oh, and y'all's thoughts on smoking meth in Taco Bell bathroom in the middle of the day.
Normally at night is a better time.
For meth?
Yeah, in Taco Bell.
In Taco Bell?
Mm-hmm. I think it's not a good idea to smoke meth in the middle of the afternoon in a Taco Bell bathroom while you're trying to send a message to us on Blood, Sweat, and Gear.
That was good. That was good.
You're going to want to smoke the meth after. And when you're reading it, I'm thinking to myself, maybe he's, Hispanic or,
Yeah.
Why is he going to be Hispanic?
I don't know. It could be. I was going to say Latino because down here,
no, he's not.
You can't say Hispanic. So maybe my point is that maybe English isn't his first. Because I deal with that a lot with when I get like private messages and things like that from people, on my eHarmony account or Tinder account or Grindr account. No, where it appears that they don't have very good grammar, but then you find out that they're actually using a translator.
Oh.
Your phone to translate what they're saying or what you're saying or what they're reading, so it comes across as poor. Well, it's poor grammar either way, but I can understand it when it's someone who has a language barrier.
I don't think he's that guy because he's a white dude with looks like a very, very white dude.
Does he have really fucked up teeth?
No, and he's got like a very white wife, and all his pictures are of hunting. I think that's why I think Scott would relate to this guy, and he uses the word y'all a lot.
Yeah, I don't think y'all goes through grammar translation, Skip.
Yeah. But
does in Texas.
Says maybe guys that go from enhanced to natural, not the PCT spiel. I don't know. I'm going to have a hard time with that. I'm just going to move on. Has anyone, this is from Jeff Jones, D. Jeff Jones. Has anyone thought of doing T&E and in an insulin pump type setup to mimic natural fluctuation? Seems like a pretty cool idea, but I don't know if it would be practical, especially since the pumps are thousands and you'd have a different substance. I don't think you could put T&E in an insulin pump.
Yeah, probably could, but I mean you're mainlining it. Oh no, insulin pump, that's the little pump in your side or your waistline.
Yeah.
So that'd be sub Q.
So would you remove the pump before you get on stage?
That sounds way too confusing. Just stick the shit in your shoulder and go.
I was thinking the same thing. I mean, you know, growth, insulin, and TNE. We're getting a lot of questions about TNE all of a sudden. Major supplier who all of a sudden had a run or a discount on a very large supply of TNE? I don't know where. Or maybe, I don't know. I doubt it came from me. Or they'd be taking Anadrol with it. And then bitching about how their mouth tastes.
Maybe. I was going to say, there's a podcast host that's been talking a lot about TNE the last couple
months. But that was
a few months
ago, right?
But it's got to, it's given it time. We gave it time now, you know. I'll go to one more here. I'm going to go back to the boards. This is always the tried and true place to get some good questions. This is from Jens. His screen name is I Am Lifting. Hi over there. I'm 39 years old, 5'9", 245 pounds, 18% body fat. He's a type 2 diabetic. Lifting since a year natural. By being on keto, I lost 40 pounds in the last 10 months.
We did this last week.
Did we? Then that's the last question we did. Then we are out. We might be out of questions here. Yep. That means that we are. Oh.
Skip, what are you looking at?
The time.
What about foam rolling, Skip?
You know what? Let's go back to this. Nobody can see where you're looking, but you're going to. Yeah, well, it's not that dramatic. All I did was this. Look, and I look right there. Like, oh, big deal. I was looking at the time. He said there were no more questions. What are you looking at, Skip?
Well, you were holding a conversation, or like you were talking to somebody back in grammar school.
I know.
And you're looking in the corner.
Kind of, I know. I was looking around.
We have another
rubber arm pop out. I didn't know what it was.
We have one more question, but I'm going to save it because it's also from UC Summa. He asked one on the Instagram page, and he asked one.
Fire away. UC Summa's got some good questions.
Well, I was going to save it because we already have a good show here, but if you insist, Scott.
No, that's okay. It's your fault, though.
I'm going to do it.
Bring the girl back. She's much better looking than you. Can we get her to zip down the top a little bit, though, maybe, or something?
Hey, careful now. Watch it.
That was Skip's suggestion when you were gone. Trust me. I was asking for him. Don't shoot the messenger.
All right. Last question then, UC Summa. Do any of you foam roll or advise clients to do it? If so, what is the general guidance? My legs are ridiculously bound up. Any tips to break up the fascia are appreciated.
Yep. I foam roll a lot because I'm all beat up. But here's the thing with foam roll that I've found. This is just for me, anecdotally.
Yeah.
If I don't do it on a regular basis, it's almost like I'm going to get ART once a week. You know, it's like I'm beating the shit out of myself. So I start stretching more. And foam rolling, and I'll foam roll like down my IT band and down my lower back. But if I don't do it regular, then it's like, oh shit, I don't want to go do it because it's like torture at first. And I think it works pretty good. I like that one. We got one over at our gym here. It's kind of got a little padding and the bumps on it.
Oh, those are great. Rumble
hollow in the middle.
Rumble roller.
Yeah, it's really hard, like the part that's underneath the slight little padding. And I get in the little, the little room they have for yoga people when they're not there. And I'll get one of those up underneath, like, my hip on the side, and I'll be on my side. And I'll stick another one up underneath my arm, like, into my rear delt, and I'll make a little rolly back and forth. And it works pretty good.
Hmm. Those rumble rollers are brutal.
Yeah.
Skip. They're
pretty good.
I do not foam roll.
Nah. Pussy.
No, but you know what? I it's essentially the same thing. I use a lacrosse ball. And the reason I use a ball instead of the roller is just because it's multi-directional. I don't think it really... I mean, you know, if foam rolling is easier and people think that it works for them, and it does, that's cool. I have no, you know, I have no negatives, nothing negative to say about it. I just have never technically... foam rolled. It probably would be better. You know, I could see it being better more for your IT bands than pretty much anything else because you don't have. It doesn't have to be multi-directional. My thing was with my psoas. That's when I first started using my chiropractor. Showed me how to use the lacrosse ball, and it was incredible. I mean, it was like I had these giant thick cables that my psoas was so tight. But anyway, the other thing is because I stretch. I put stretching above foam rolling or anything else. But that's just me based on the problems that I've had. You know, with my back and things like that. I think that sometimes people spend too much time rolling either with a foam roller or with a, you know, with a ball instead of stretching. And I think stretching is equally as good, if not sometimes better.
Yeah. And like you said, too, it's what works for your situation.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's all individual. So, but I think that just because you foam roll all the time, you should probably still not rule out stretch, because sometimes stretching can, I mean, it just saved my ass, and I've had it save so many other, you know, other people's training and quality of life too. So at the same time, I could easily go back to also using my lacrosse ball more than I do. But even now, my stretching protocol is only about half, maybe 2/3 of what it was before, probably half. And I stay very limber and loose, and everything feels great.
Real quick question I'll throw in here from Joshua. He says, has anyone busted a blood vessel in their eye from lifting?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah? How about you, Skip? Yeah.
I'll be honest, I have not.
No? I did one time.
Nope, never did. Never puked. Well, I say I haven't puked in years. I have felt like shit.
Yeah.
So apparently my balls aren't very big, and I don't train hard enough. I don't know.
Yeah, I used to get them deadlifting. I mean, I would deadlifting heavy, and then the next evening or whatever, I'd have that big red fucking thing across my eye from where it busted open.
I remember when Kai Greene did that, when I think he was prepping with Oscar Arden, and he was, like, out in Vegas. I think that's when that was, and he was, like, getting so emotional and doing all these videos on MD about, like, you know, like, the being in the trenches of the experience and all these, like, cardio confessionals, and he just was, like, a mess, and his eye was just, like, bright red, you know, the whole time, sticking out of his face. Yeah.
It's one of those things, once you have it happen once, it'll happen more often.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of like Skip looking in the corner of his room. When it happens once, he happens more often.
All right. Well, we're done here. I think we did okay. Scott, what's your – he's got one more question. Oh, wait, this is from Harvey. What's your powerlifting max?
In what?
He just says powerlifting maxes.
In a meet would be – I did 454 at 198 pounds in the bench raw. My squat was always what kept me behind. I think the most I did was it was either 575 or 585. And then deadlift was 735.
Okay.
And those were a mix between 198 and 220.
Nice. So
I never could get it all together. That's why I went just with the bench stuff later on. And that became something you could do. You know, single. The squat always killed me because guys would. I mean, when a guy gets you by 75, 100 pounds in the squat, I mean, it's like, yeah, that's hard to make up in the other two lifts unless they have a real deficiency. But most of those guys didn't. So, you know, is what it is.
Right
on. I'm not real flexible through the hips. So it wasn't that it was so much the weight, but when I got past parallel, I'm not an ass to the grass guy by any means. I don't have that flexibility, so that was part of the problem. I probably should have stretched back then.
All right. Well, we are out of questions. Josh mentioned he threw in that those were the 140 pound dumbbells on bench press that he got that blown blood vessel. So I think he earned it. You know, he earned it.
And be careful with them heavy dumbbells, especially if you do incline. That's how I tore my labrum the second time.
I'm dealing with an arm issue right now with my left. I have a left minor bicep strain from getting a dumbbell into place before I sat down. Dumbbell presses are a pain in the ass, more so outside of the actual set, but getting them into place and putting them away is more work. Sometimes I just question whether it's worth it or not, but I want to keep going because I got to get my daughter picked up from school. So I'll shut up.
All right, guys, we are going to end this live feed. For another episode of Blood, Sweat, and Gear, Scott McNally with Skip Hill and S2H. The show has been brought to you by True Nutrition. You can use our code ADVICES. And guys, check this show out. It's going to be up at YouTube by Thursday. It's also going to be, of course, on audio podcast, iTunes, It's going to be at advicesradio.com. And of course, everywhere where you can get podcasts, just search Advices Radio. Guys, thanks for doing this video with me. This was fun. I think it worked. So, sounds good. Guys, I'll see you soon. Sound good?
We'll see.
Are we done?
And this ain't it. In that space cool, free that nigga rap. We go way back like a song roof. All these bitches rubbing on me, I feel like I'm at J-Jules. Get that paper up front, before I even walk through. Let's go. Me and my dog gon' get bands. Me and my dog fuck the whole body 10. It's just me and my dog in that motherfucking Benz. I can't wait for my dog to get out that fucking can. Yeah, y'all can listen, y'all can step.
Advices Radio Network.